She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Our show today is made possible due to the generous support of the Chapman Automotive Group. They are doing their share every day. They're showing their care every day. And we thank them for their support of the Mrs. Green's World movement and for everything they do to make our planet and our community a healthier, more sustainable one. The name of our show today is Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds. And I want to do a personal request to all of our very loyal listeners around the country and around the world. Stop what you're doing. Be present. Give yourself the gift of this next hour, and a gift it indeed will be. I am so sure of that. Joining me to help us learn how to change our hearts and minds about how we treat animals is Gene Bauer. He is the co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary, America's leading farm animal protection organization. Time magazine calls him the conscience of the food movement, and he is widely recognized as one of the most influential social justice activists of the 21st century for his work to change the way society views and treats farm animals, and in turn, frequently, its workers. He is a national best-selling author, triathlete, and pioneer in the field of undercover investigations. And we'll do a little bit more about Gene in the next break, after the next break. Welcome, Gene, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
And I want to get on with the show. I'm not kidding. I wanted to crank this because there's so much to cover. And I'm writing the notes and saying, okay, another two-hour show that we have to do in 60 minutes. So, you know, quite frankly, where does one begin when covering a topic so vast and so important? And I guess for me, it's always the question of what happened way back when? How did you get hooked for something that would become your life's mission over 30 years ago? What happened?
Yeah, well, for me, I grew up like everybody around me, eating meat, milk, and eggs, going to McDonald's, and supporting this food industry that is horrendous. But I didn't think about it, and I didn't recognize the consequences of my food choices. But I always had some concerns about our world, and I didn't want to be a cog in a wheel of a system that was causing so much harm. And as time went, and I learned about factory farming, I learned about cruelty to animals, I learned about how animal agriculture harms the environment, and I learned that I could live without eating animals. And I thought to myself, if I can live well without causing unnecessary harm, why wouldn't I? And so I went vegan in 1985 and then co-founded Farm Sanctuary in 1986. And at the time, we didn't have this plan or this vision of creating a large organization. We just saw a problem that needed to be addressed. And we started going into places, finding animals literally thrown in trash cans or thrown on piles of dead animals. We started rescuing them, and we now operate three sanctuaries, one in New York, two in California. We work to encourage people to rethink how we relate to other animals, especially farm animals. And once they come to Farm Sanctuary, they are our friends, not our food. So we model a different kind of relationship there. And then we encourage citizens just to be mindful about the way they eat, and ultimately to make food choices that are aligned with their own values and their own interests. So for me, it's just an ongoing process. And it started with a desire not to cause unnecessary harm in the world and to live in a way that was healthy, was sustainable, was respectful of our planet and other creatures who we share this planet with. And that's what it continues to be about for me.
You know, you shared a little bit about it. I just think we have to cover a little bit of the ugly side of this before we get to all the solutions that you are helping to pave the way, lead the way, bring about long-term systemic change. The conditions. There are millions of animals that are raised under factory farm conditions, and
yes,
no air, literally, like enough air to live, darkness, not being able to move? I mean, what are some of the things that you started to see? And I think people need to know it. We can handle the truth.
Yeah, well, actually, in the United States, we're talking more than millions of animals. We're talking billions. Over 9 billion farm animals are raised and slaughtered every year in the U.S. The vast majority, like over 99%, live in horrendous factory farming conditions where they're crowded in warehouses, where they're, in some cases, kept in crates packed so tightly they can't even turn around or stretch their limbs. In the case of calves who are raised for veal or dairy cows, oftentimes they are chained by the neck for months at a time, and that's all they experience. They're not allowed to go outside and graze. They're not allowed to be who they are. And they're seen more as commodities than as living, feeling creatures. And, you know, most people are unhappy to see this and don't want to be part of it. And too often, though, people say, don't tell me, I don't want to know. And I think it is important for us to look and
it
to
is.
Pay attention. And then to be responsible, take responsibility for our actions. And I think when people do that, at the end of the day, they feel much more empowered to live in a way they can feel good about instead of being in denial. But these are some of the conditions. And in certain cases, animals, for example, in egg production, egg-laying hens are packed in these small wire cages so tightly they can't even stretch their wings, and they're constantly scraping against the bars of their cages so their feathers wear off. They end up with bruises and abrasions on their bodies, and they live this way for a year or two in most cases. They're also packed so tightly in egg production that they cut off parts of their beaks so they don't peck each other and injure each other, because they're so overcrowded and they're driven to excessive pecking and fighting because of the stress of that kind of a condition. In the case of pigs that are used for breeding, the mother pigs are kept in what are called gestation crates. They're 2-foot-wide metal enclosures where these mother pigs can't even turn around. They're constantly scraping against the bars of their cages, so they end up with bruises on their shoulders. They become lame because they don't exercise, and they're standing on these hard concrete floors that damage their feet. And they'll live that way for a few years. But for the industry, they're seen just as baby-making machines. They're not seen as living, feeling creatures. And so they live in these small crates their whole lives. And that's the reality on factory farms today.
So I have to ask this question. This is a very personal show for me because of the struggles I've had on my journey, and you and I talked briefly off air a little bit about it. Like, nobody could even force feed me a piece of veal. And that was my daughter, who is now 35, announced when she was 12, I'm never eating veal. And she told my mother at a restaurant, she goes, Grandma, if you eat veal, I'm leaving the table. And she meant it. And nobody ever ate veal. When she turned me on to that way before Mrs. Green was born. Why can I not eat veal, be repulsed by it, and yet go to a place and eat, you know, cage-free, all those nice terms that assuage my conscience, eggs, and then guilt-free bacon. And I look, never caged, never crated. What about those, what do we do to get to the point where I'm saying, no, it's still not okay to cage those animals or have them raised for my meal? Do you know the question here?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, oftentimes those labels tend to sound a lot better than they are.
Right.
And they're intended more for marketing purposes than as factual descriptions of the conditions. So even in cage-free operations, hens are de-beaked because they're packed so tightly and crowded so intensely that they're driven to pecking and fighting, and it's not a healthy situation. And the air is still full of noxious fumes because
right.
there are so many kept in these environments. So I think, you know, going with your instinct that you don't want to cause unnecessary harm is the first thing, and building from that and stopping the consumption of veal is a very good step. But there are many other steps as well that can be taken. And for many people, change happens incrementally. And one of Farm Sanctuary's organizational values is to speak to people where they are on their own journeys and encouraged and support ongoing steps in a more compassionate direction. And so, you know, eating less meat is better than eating more meat. Oftentimes people participate in something like a Meatless Mondays program where
right.
for one day a week they eat no meat. And what that does is it allows people to recognize what they can eat and all the great vegan options available, and people become more comfortable then in eating plant-based, and then oftentimes extend it beyond Monday to Tuesday and so on. So it's a process, and it's a matter of just taking steps, taking fun steps that are practical and doable, and then building on those.
And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later on the show, but your book is going to be just another bestseller if it isn't already. I didn't check if it was, but I'm putting that out there. And one of the things that you said that's so important is baby steps. And the big detour for people is when they start trying to find options that are delicious. And there are. In our journey, we have found some things that are really good to eat and they taste good. You know, the thing is, like, one of my favorite things to eat is sweet potatoes, but I love butter on it. So it's like, that's better than eating a steak, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can also now find all kinds of vegan margarine. So you don't even need to use butter that comes from cows. You can use plant-based margarine instead of butter.
That will taste delicious, I'm sure. So that's
absolutely. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That's the next mission.
I had 3 baked potatoes last night, all with a good bit of margarine on them.
So it's a healthy alternative. I want to ask you, I think it's a tough question, and I can tell by everything I read about Farm Sanctuary and read about you, there's not a lot of judgment. There is a higher road that you inspire people to follow, but talk to me a little bit about the owners and the workers on these farms. How do they do it? I mean, I'm not casting any stones. I still eat some of the meat that they produce. That's the truth. And I hope that in 6 months you are on the show and I say, guess what? I haven't had any meat. But how do you steel yourself from what you have to witness every day? I mean, are there statistics about their health and their lifespan? And I would say their suicide rates, God help me.
Yeah, no, this is a violent, bloody industry. And I feel terrible for the animals that are abused in that system. I also feel badly for the people who work in slaughterhouses, for example. Could you imagine what it would be like to work in a slaughterhouse where for 8 hours a day your job is cutting the throats of animals?
No.
That does something to you. It's not good for the animals. It's not good for people. So I think the way people get through that is that they don't pay very much attention, or they come up with rationalizations to denigrate the animals and to further victimize these victims of abuse. And that is not a healthy situation for anybody. There's this story I recall hearing about the executioners during the Salem witch hunt in Massachusetts. And the executioners who were going to kill these witches were told, don't look in their eyes, because if you look in their eyes, they will cast a spell on you and you won't be able to kill them. Well, basically, that spell is empathy. It's looking into the eyes of another person or another animal and seeing there is somebody there, somebody who wants to live, somebody who has a life and has their experiences and their feelings and their soul even. And you don't want to kill them. You don't want to cause harm to somebody else. So in factory farms or in slaughterhouses, you know, workers don't look into their eyes and try not to see them as living, feeling, sentient creatures. And that I think, lessens our humanity. When we lose our empathy, we lose a very important part of our humanity.
And
that goes beyond the slaughterhouse, too.
Right,
you know, there's
right.
been numerous studies showing that in communities where you have factory farms and slaughterhouses, you also have increased instances of drug abuse, of domestic violence, of various other social problems. So violence is violence, and it spreads beyond the slaughterhouse. It goes beyond the species barrier. And, you know, oftentimes, in fact, animal cruelty is a precursor to cruelty to other humans. So violence is violence. And to the extent we can move away from it and promote more compassionate lifestyles, we'll all be better off.
And there's the whole social justice issue. With so many of these issues about climate change and a sustainable planet and healthy living, a lot of these less than satisfactory, and that is really a gross under-exaggeration, factories are put in marginalized communities where it is the poor that work there because that's the job that they can get. And it's not healthy to work in these places. I mean, it's not good for your health. It's horrible for your health.
That's absolutely correct. And they will also locate these facilities in areas where people don't have a lot of resources and aren't able to prevent them from moving in. And it also decreases property value. So if somebody is living in a rural area, their value of their property goes down and their health suffers as well because of the noxious fumes in the air. People who live near these factory farms can't even hang their laundry out on the clothesline because of the flies and the smell. So it's horrible for everybody. And again, this is an industry that we don't need to have. And by choosing to vote with our dollars and support a different kind of farming system, one where animals are not exploited, where the earth is not destroyed, where workers are not abused, we can all make a difference by being more mindful about the way we eat.
And I think you should talk a little bit more about the implications about the harm to the planet. It is not just the harm to the factory workers in the surrounding areas. The implications for these factory farms are exacerbating everything that's wrong with an unhealthy planet. It's just making it unhealthier. Yeah. Is that really accurate?
Absolutely. A few years ago, the United Nations put out a report called Livestock's Long Shadow. And in that report, the UN reported that animal agriculture is one of the top contributors to the most serious environmental problems we're facing, including depletion of scarce resources like water and topsoil, including the use of fossil fuels, the loss of biodiversity, the destruction of rainforests. Animal agriculture is one of the top contributors to climate change. It contributes more, in fact, than the entire transportation industry. So this is an industry that is depleting scarce resources. And one of the reasons for that is in order to produce animal foods, you need to grow tons and tons of corn and soybean and other feed to feed farm animals. And so you have vast acreages that are used for animal feed. And if we use that land to grow food for people, we would use about one-tenth as much land. And that would mean that we would put less stress on the planet. We wouldn't have to cut down rainforests. We could leave more space for wildlife. We would lighten our footprint significantly. We exploit and despoil natural resources on the one end. We then create pollution, including greenhouse gas emissions and also animal manure. We produce about 130 times more manure from animals than people in the U.S., and that's not regulated in the same way, so that's another issue. You have groundwater that's polluted, even have antibiotic-resistant bacteria now in groundwater downstream from factory farms. So this is an industry that is really destroying the planet as well as local communities in terms of the environment.
It's really, really, really tough to listen. I mean, it is.
And it's horrible.
It's really horrible. And I think it is so true that, you know, to know better, do better. And I always think of that Jack Nicholson movie, Can You Handle the Truth? Well, we better be able to handle the truth, because it doesn't matter if you are not, you know, you don't have to go visit a farm sanctuary or a factory farm to know as an intelligent, present, living present human being that this is having a negative impact on our health, whether we like it or not, and on the health of the planet. I mean, it's very clear, and a show like this will help make it harder to be disconnected from all of those. They're just statements of facts. It's science. It's numbers. It's real. And, you know, we're going to take a break in about, I don't know, less than a minute. And I want to ask you the question. You can think about it on the break, because what I'd like to know from your perspective, having lived this, worked this, breathed this, eaten this with no meat every day for the past 30 years, how did we get here? How did we get so disconnected from the food we eat every day? And I use myself as a great example. I am a caring, consciously living human being. I was in social services for 35 years. How did I get so disconnected that what steak became to me is something wrapped with styrofoam, which is really bad for you, and plastic at Safeway. That's where meat comes from, is Safeway. So when we come back, you want to tackle that one and talk a little bit about how did we get here so fast?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, everybody, stay here with me. More from Gene Bauer Farm Sanctuary. You're not going to want to miss a word.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific Time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for being with us. Just another quick shout out to Chapman Automotive Group for helping to make this show possible. I am so grateful to them. Please think of Chapman if you're in the market for some of the greenest cars sold in the USA today. You can visit them at ChapmanTucson.com. The name of our show today is Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds, and joining me to help us learn how to do just that relative to our consumption of meat is Gene Bauer, co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary, America's leading farm animal protection organization. And I want to just tell you a little bit more about Gene. For nearly 30 years, he has traveled extensively campaigning to raise awareness about the abuses of industrialized factory farming and our cheap food system. That's another part of it. Cheap food is so cheap in our world. Gene's latest book, which we are going to talk about, published by our friends at Rodale. We always love when we can give a shout out to Rodale and have had Maria on the show. Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, the ultimate guide to eating mindfully, living longer, and feeling better every day, which shares lessons from his nearly 30-year career with Farm Sanctuary. And Gene, on the break, it just, you know, I cracked myself up, which is kind of sad, but I want you to answer that very heavy question I asked you about how did we get here. And then in the entire first segment, we haven't even talked about all you do at Farm Sanctuary. So we have to cover that and what the book is about, because we're more into the very deep stirrings that have to occur when people start thinking about this. So talk to us about how did we get here, and then tell us about Farm Sanctuary. That's a 2-hour show in and of itself.
Yeah. Well, how did we get here? You know, it happens, I think, incrementally. And if you look at the history of human beings on the planet, we have generally been more plant-based eaters. If you look at different kinds of ethnic foods, like Chinese food or Ethiopian food or Indian food or Mexican food, generally speaking, we've eaten primarily plants. The idea of eating lots of meat is a relatively new construct, especially in affluent societies. I think it is also sort of an indication of power and the ability to exploit and control resources. But we've gotten to a point now where eating meat is the norm. You know, after World War II in the U.S. especially is when things really started taking off. And in fact, some of the material and capital and industries that had been involved in the war effort were then reappropriated towards petrochemical fertilizers and the industrial farming system. So after World War II, we started really eating a lot of meat in the U.S., and the fast food industry is part of this, McDonald's making hamburgers cheap and accessible to a large audience. And one of the things that allowed that to occur was USDA subsidies and the production of cheap corn and soybeans as feed for farm animals and government policies that encourage increasing consumption of animal products. So although it might appear that these products are cheap, and they are cheap at the grocery store or at restaurants, at the end of the day, if you look at the external costs in terms of the environmental waste, the human health problems, they're extremely costly. It's been estimated that we could save 70% on healthcare costs in the U.S. by shifting to a whole food plant-based diet. That's massive. So that's a lot of money and a lot of suffering of humans and animals that need not occur. But how did we get here? we're creatures of habit today. You know, most of us grow up eating animals, and we assume that that's the normal way things should be, and that has just been the trend over the past 50 or so years. However, there has been a shift just within the past 10 years or so, and the number of animals being killed and eaten in the U.S. has started going down. And I think it's because people recognize that this is a system that is bad for animals and bad for ourselves and bad for the environment, and we are now starting to see a shift. So although it's a huge problem in many ways, it's also a problem that every one of us can do something about. You know, there's a lot of things in this world that we don't have control over, but when it comes to what we put on our plate and what we put in our mouth, we have a lot of control over that. So to me, I take a lot of hope from that. I generally tend to be optimistic, and I'm seeing enormous changes. And so although things are really bad and have been really bad for quite a while, there's now glimpses of hope, and people are starting to make a change, just personally. And people feel good when they do that, and it's making a big difference.
I feel that shift, too. Having done this for almost 10 years now, there is a change. There is a shift. The winds of change are blowing, and I'm glad that you feel that way. So I have another tough question relative to that, but people will ask me, why didn't I ask you this? What is your reaction when people say, animals were put on this earth to feed us? It's the natural order of things. Oh, good, I hit a chord. Go for it. What do you do when people say that other than,
I think that we share this planet with other animals, and this idea or this notion that animals are put here for our use is the same sort of argument that has been used to say, you know, women were put here for men, or certain people were put here to be used by other people.
Right.
These are all part of the same notion of exploitation and entitlement of some over others. And, you know, if we can live well without causing harm, why wouldn't we? You know, that's at the end of the day, you know, we're all human beings. We are all on this planet. None of us are perfect. Just by living on this planet, we are going to cause harm. But to the extent we can lessen the harm we cause, to lighten our footprint, and live in a way that is aligned with compassionate values and our humanity, and live in a way also that doesn't destroy the planet, I think most people want to do that. So this idea that the other animals are here for us to use, it's just a rationalization, and it's one of many rationalizations that have been used over the years to enable us to continue doing something that is inhumane and unnecessary. And I think we need those rationalizations because at the end of the day, I think human beings are primarily emotional animals, and we feel badly when we cause harm to others, and so we have to come up with reasons for doing it, rationalizations for doing it. You know, it's been said that we're the rational animal, but I actually think it's a lot more accurate to say we're the rationalizing animal, and we really need to rationalize when we're doing something we don't feel very good about. And this idea that animals are here for us to use is a common rationalization.
You know, when I have a guest like you, this is a little sidebar, which I'm famous for. I wish I had someone here. You are a Twitter soundbite waiting to happen, and I mean that the highest of compliments. The highest of compliment, where you can take things that you say and get it out there for people to think about. And it's really powerful, some of the things that you are giving us to really think about. And I guess I wonder about it, and we have to talk about Farm Sanctuary, is how do we love our dogs and cats and spend billions of dollars feeding them healthy, getting in their shots, buying them cute collars, putting outfits on them, rescuing them. We have more rescue shelters here for animals in Tucson, I think, than we do for people. And I am barely kidding. It's like, how do we make that, how do we put that little box in, oh, we love them, but we're gonna eat this one. We couldn't eat a cat or a dog. Everybody would there'd be a national outrage.
Yes. Well, I think the instinct to care for and help cats and dogs is a natural, healthy human tendency. But as you say, there's this inconsistency between the way we treat some animals, you know, cats and dogs, for example, and other animals like cows, pigs, chickens, turkeys, and other farm animals in this country. And the distinctions between which ones we eat and which ones we see as companions are really quite arbitrary. in some countries, they eat cats and dogs. And here in the U.S., we're appalled by that idea. But in other countries, they don't eat pigs or they don't eat cows.
Right, right.
And they're upset by the fact that we do in this country. So, you know, one of our Farm Sanctuary's first bumper sticker was actually a question, and it asked, if you love animals called pets, why do you eat animals called dinner? And the distinctions are really our own creations. And at the end of the day, all of these animals have feelings. They're individuals. They want to live and enjoy their lives just like we do and like our cats and dogs do. And the good news is we can live well and they can live well and we don't have to kill them. And that's good for them and it's also good for us.
It's really everybody wins. I mean, it really is an everybody win and situation. I mean, it's really good and people can still make enormous amounts of money because at the end of the day, a lot of this is, if it isn't about the money, it's about the money. So let's just really stop for a minute on this because I want to talk in depth, if we can, about the Someone Project, if there's time. But talk about the sanctuaries. You're doing enormous things, tremendous things, not just rescuing animals and having these sanctuaries. You're doing education. You're helping other people who would want to start a sanctuary. You're giving them guides. So go. You can talk for 10 minutes without me interrupting about what's going on at Farm Sanctuary. This is your bliss.
Well, the Farm Sanctuary works to change how our society views and treats farm animals. So we operate three sanctuaries, one in Watkinsville, New York, and two in California, one just outside of Los Angeles. And once the animals come to us, they're allowed to live out their lives. We take care of them like most people take care of their cats and dogs. They are our friends, not our food. And we encourage people to come visit Farm Sanctuary, get to know the animals, get out there with the pigs, give a pig a belly rub. And it's really a pretty beautiful thing to see when you go out there and you approach a 600-pound pig.
And, getting a and belly rub?
For a belly rub, you touch their tummy and they will flop over for this belly rub and they'll be grunting and groaning in pleasure as you're rubbing their tummy, communicating that they enjoy it and thank you for doing that. We have sheep at the farm who love to be petted just like dogs, and sometimes after you've petted them for a while and you're ready to walk away, they will paw at you like a dog paws at you when they want you to keep petting them. So they're not that different. You know, we have animals that know their names, and they come when they hear their name called. So they're not that different than cats and dogs. And what's also, I think, remarkable about what happens at Farm Sanctuary is the healing that occurs. Most animals who come to Farm Sanctuary have experienced horrible cruelty at the hands of the factory farming industry. They've been in crates. They've had experienced painful mutilations where they've had their beaks cut off or their tails cut off or parts of their toes cut off. So they've only known pain when a human being has approached them. So when they first come to Farm Sanctuary, for good reason, they are afraid of us and they don't want to come close to people. But as time goes, they learn that they are in a safe place. They learn to trust us. And I think a big part of this actually is being around the other animals at the sanctuary who know they're in a safe place.
Right.
And recognize that. And so the new arrivals see these animals who have been there, and they kind of take their cue and become warm up to humans more quickly. So it's a beautiful thing to see this transformation where animals who had only known pain at human hands come to recognize that they are part of our family, that they are our friends, that they will be treated with kindness, and then they begin to flourish and enjoy life, and they start kicking up their heels and playing in the pastures, for example, for in the case of cows, and pigs get to be who pigs are. They get to go out and root in the soil, and pigs are very earthy animals, so they get in there and they dig their noses into the dirt.
And they're smart.
Explore their world. Oh, they're very smart.
They're so
absolutely
smart.
Yes, I remember talking to an animal scientist who had worked with pigs years ago, And he told me that they are smarter than chimpanzees. So these are very bright animals.
You know, I pulled one of the quotes from your website about the Someone Project, which we can talk about. But it's from Jane Goodall. And who would say, did you ever hear anyone talk smack about Dr. Jane? They just don't. I mean, people,
right.
She's an icon that's recognized. You know, everybody knows who she is. McDonald's and Dr. Jane Goodall, name recognition. And she said, farm animals feel pleasure and sadness, excitement and resentment, depression, fear and pain. They are far more aware and intelligent than we ever imagined. They are individuals in their own right. So that speaks to everything you said, including that's how we think of our dogs and cats. So do we think that all those other people checked all those other things at the, you know, the animals? They checked all those things when they got admitted to the factory farm? Not hardly.
Absolutely. Now, these are, you know, the key messages. These are someone. There is somebody there. They are not something. They are not just a commodity to be exploited. And when you see them as someone, then there are ethical ramifications to treating them badly, just like there are ethical ramifications to treating other human beings badly. And we don't need to do it. You know, we do not need to exploit and eat other animals. We're much better off if we don't do that.
How does an animal typically come to you, an abused animal from a factory farm? I mean, how do they come to you, and what do you do about capacity?
Yeah, they've come to us from a variety of places. You know, over the years, we've done investigations, and we have literally found living animals discarded and written off as dead, left on dead piles or in trash cans or in alleyways. In some cases, people that work at these farms actually contact us because there's an animal there who is sick, who is not going to receive the necessary care, and they contact us. And sometimes veterinarians who work at farms also contact us and ask us to help. Occasionally a neighbor will see a problem and contact us. So, and sometimes law enforcement agents are even moving in to help animals. There was a case in upstate New York on a pig factory where this mother pig was being moved from one crate to the next crate, and she was being shocked and beaten. And one of the workers saw this and actually reported the abuse to the authorities, which is rare. But the authorities moved in, and the farm agreed to let that animal come live at Farm Sanctuary. That pig's name was Julia, and within a day after she arrived at Farm Sanctuary, she gave birth to 16 piglets. That was an example of somebody on a farm actually speaking out, getting the authorities involved, and the pig farm allowed this animal to come live at Farm Sanctuary.
And that's really progress. I mean, that's really, really a good idea.
Yeah, well, I think the fact that Farm Sanctuary exists gives people a model and an example of living with farm animals in a more compassionate way. And hopefully it inspires people, even on farms, to kind of recalibrate their thinking a little bit. You know, unless you see examples, you don't even know that certain ways of living are possible. You know, I grew up without meeting or knowing of any vegetarians or vegans.
Right.
Until the 1980s, when I met vegetarians and vegans and recognized that this was a possible way to live. And so I think the more vegans there are, the more vegetarians there are, the more there will be, because we learn from those around us, and we need to have these positive examples. And I think Farm Sanctuary presents a positive example of living with other animals in a compassionate, mutually beneficial way.
And at what point did you realize, I mean, the challenge is so vast, the numbers are so large, at what point did you and the team of people doing this realize we can't keep putting up sanctuaries, because that's going to be a big capital investment of billions, but we can teach other people? And it's not a great analogy, but teaching them to fish instead of giving them a fish, you know, it's like, how, instead of building more, you're helping other people to do what you're doing.
That's right. That's right. It was clear early on that it was impossible for us to rescue the billions of animals who needed to be rescued. So the animals who come to Farm Sanctuary are ambassadors for the other animals who are not able to rescue. And we just try to present a positive example and encourage other people to emulate it, to live in a way that is more compassionate and better for ourselves as well as for animals. So, but no, we do work with other organizations who are interested in setting up sanctuaries, but we always encourage people to go slow, take it easy, and do a lot of education as well as rescue.
It's a big thing to say yes to.
It's a responsibility. Yeah. It's a multi-year responsibility.
You can't just change your mind. So it's really daunting. And I am sure when people come to visit a sanctuary, it's transformative for them at every level. I can't imagine my going and not making the next step to not just meatless Mondays, meatless Tuesdays, but meatless welcome to my new world. Okay, we're going to have to take another break, and I promise you when we come back, a little bit more about the sanctuary and then a lot more about your latest book, Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, The Ultimate Guide to Eating Mindfully, Living Longer, and Feeling Better Every Day. Everybody, we'll be right back. Time is flying, and I only have three more pages of questions that I have to get through. Please stay here with me. More from Jean Bauer.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. The name of our show today is Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds. And I hope your hearts and minds are being changed. It's pumping up the volume once again for me. Please join me once again in welcoming Jean Bauer. Jean is the co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary, America's leading farm animal protection organization. Time magazine does indeed call him the conscience of the food movement, and he's widely recognized as one of the most influential social justice activists of the 21st century for his work to change the way society views and treats farm animals. And Jean, I want to say a shout out at the top of this segment and at the end that people can follow you at farmsanctuary.org, and your handles for Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are all the same, Farm Sanctuary. It'll be up on our website, a link directly to your website, and I encourage people to learn more because we won't be able to cover it all on the show because there's so much to talk about. So let's go into the book. Do you want to say a little bit more about Farm Sanctuary? You have the sanctuaries, you do private events, you rescue animals, you do home adoption and placement. Is there anything else you want to highlight?
Yeah, sure. We also do regular tours of the sanctuaries where at our Los Angeles farm, for example, on weekends, people can come and tour the facility, meet the animals, learn more about what we do. We do the same thing at our sanctuary in upstate New York during the visitor season. We also have overnight accommodations at our farm in upstate New York. And as you mentioned, we do events and just encourage people to come get to know the animals and see more about what we're doing. But the book is another, I think, very useful tool to reach people. It's called Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, and it outlines the benefits of eating plants instead of animals, living more mindfully. And it also speaks to people where they are on their own journeys. There are simple tips for taking steps in the direction of more vegan, plant-based living. And there's 100 incredible recipes from some of the top chefs around the U.S. That were contributed for the book. So it's available online and at Farm Sanctuary and at bookstores. Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, I think, is a very useful tool. It tells you also how to set up your vegan kitchen. So it's really practical and helps people take steps that are good for themselves, animals, and planet.
And from what I've read, and I'm sorry that I didn't get the book prior to the interview, it's, you know, time flies when you're trying to preserve the planet on so many fronts, as the Mrs. Green's World team is. But there's one thing that jumped out at me. Eating in harmony with your values. And I don't know what that says, but that got me in touch with what are my values. I'm not cruel to any animal, ever. You know, in my world, in social services, when I dealt with human beings, there was a lot more attention put to cruelty to an animal than beating up a kid. I mean, that's the truth. It's like very different.
Absolutely.
So what are you?
No, absolutely.
Yes.
Well, you know, most people are humane. Most people don't like cruelty. Most people don't want to support or contribute to cruelty. But at the same time, most people are unwittingly supporting this horrible industry that's responsible for some of the worst cruelty we have ever seen on this planet. So there's this massive disconnect between people's values and our humanity and our behavior. And so sometimes people are afraid of looking because it requires us possibly to make changes if we're going to want to live in a way that is in harmony with and aligned with our values. But we recognize that people are emotional and have attachments, sometimes attachments even to bad habits, and we need support to create change and to make changes. And so this book, Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, helps with that. Coming to Farm Sanctuary, getting involved with our community, or getting involved with other animal advocates and plant-based advocates in your community. There are often these vegan meetups that you can be part of that provide support and validation that are very important. But, you know, most of us are humane, and I think it makes all the sense in the world to pay attention to the way we eat. And if we don't pay attention and we ignore reality, we ultimately do so at our own peril. I think that we are creating a situation on this planet that is not tenable. And it's also the way we eat is not only killing the planet and other animals, it's killing us. You know, eating food that clogs our arteries, that contributes to a higher risk of cancer, diabetes, and all these other health problems, is completely irrational if you think about it.
It is.
But we're doing it. So, there's Hippocrates said, let food be thy medicine. And it really can be. If we eat in a way that is good for us physically and is aligned with our values emotionally, it only enhances and improves our lives.
And the good news is, if you don't do that, they'll make pills to make you better.
I tried to say that without laughing,
but I mean, I was talking to a group of my friends this morning about the Super Bowl commercials, and I'm like, did I miss something? Or were like almost half of the Super Bowl commercials about some kind of drug for, you know, let's be gross here, constipation or diarrhea or something related to bad diet? That's not what they were making the connection to, but it's like, oh, if you take opiates, opioid disorders.
Yeah.
I was like, what? All of us were...
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Bad has become normal. Bad has become normal. And, you know, people will drink cow's milk and they have problems, so then they also take lactate, which is crazy. You know, cow's milk is made for calves, not for human beings. And, you know, so taking these drugs is not the ultimate solution, and it just sort of enables the ongoing problem to continue. You know, heart medication is another thing. The pharmaceutical industry
love
is
this meat thing.
Involved.
Yeah, they love this meat thing. More meat.
Well, not only eat more meat, we make a lot of money on the heart medications. And a whole other thing about the drug business is the majority of antibiotics produced in the U.S. are fed to farm animals on these factory farms to keep them alive and growing in these filthy conditions. So,
oh, and by the way, then they end up in our water supply, so we get it whether we like it or not.
That's right.
True. Close that circle. But you mentioned something. Yep. So go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. Finish your thought.
No, I was just going to say this is an industry that is so huge, but all of us every day has choices that we make that can contribute to a solution or can continue to contribute to the problem. So we can be empowered to create change.
And you made the very true observation that most people are compassionate, they're humane, they care. If they see a dog get hit by a car, they stop. I mean, rescue dogs, it goes on. The other part that I think is a perfect connection to that is most people want to be healthy. They do. So your book, Living, Farm Sanctuary Life, is connect with nature. I read that you stress that. And reducing stress, all of which, by the way, will help you lead a healthier life. Stay out of doctor's offices and emergency rooms.
That's exactly right. Those things are good for us. They're also good for the planet, and they're good for other animals. And in the book, I talk about five tenets. One of those has to do with engaging in a mindful relationship with other animals. And research has shown that when we engage in a mindful relationship with other animals and live in a positive way with them, it actually does reduce our stress. And you contrast that with what it's like to work in a slaughterhouse or in a factory farm, where that unhealthy relationship just increases the stress and takes away from our lives. So, you know, what we're talking about here is a win-win. We're not talking about something that's going to harm us. It's actually going to help us and other animals. And in living the farm sanctuary life, I give simple suggestions for taking steps, you know, setting up your kitchen, you know, participating in a meatless Monday, things you can substitute. Instead of, you know, spaghetti and meatballs, for example, you can have spaghetti and there's plant-based meatballs you can have instead, and things you can eat and recipes you can make that are very satisfying, provide you all the nutrition you need. You know, in the last several years, I turned 50, let's see, in 2012, and started doing marathons and triathlons. I did an Ironman triathlon, and I've been a vegan for 30 years now. So just showing that you don't only survive by eating plant foods, but you can thrive. And I think most people, as you say, want to be healthy. I think most people don't want to cause unnecessary harm to other animals. Most people also want to live on a planet that's not being destroyed, where rainforests are not being cut down, where we're, you know, at risk for climate change that could change the way we live on this planet. So, you know, these are things that we all basically agree on, and there are simple steps we can take to live more in alignment with that.
And it's again, I keep thinking everybody wins. Everybody wins.
Yes.
It's just like there's just no downside to this. I want to ask a really important question about, I've had some amazing guests on the show recently. All my guests are amazing. There's a joke among our team that I call my show producer, Kelly King, and say, that was the best guest I ever had. And she goes, right. Mm-hmm. Except for last week and the week before and the week before. So it speaks volumes about the caliber of my guests, yourself included. But they talk about, and one of the people was like Sipporah Berman, and another one, David Corton, Change the Story, Change the Future. These are thought leaders in their own right. And they talk about, simply put, you know, the power of the purse versus power of public policy. And they're saying that as consumers, we need to be conscious of both, that we may not be able to buy our way out of a healthier planet for animals. We need to work on public policy changes and work on what we buy as consumers. How do you weigh in on that?
I agree that we need to do both. The way policies are set today, we have government support for an industry that is causing so much harm. And the only reason that meat is as cheap as it is because of massive government subsidies and external costs that are paid for by taxpayers instead of by the industry itself. So we need to work on policies that make polluters pay for their pollution, that support healthcare systems. You know, so that's a very important policy thing. But the reason that these industries are so powerful in Washington, D.C. is because for decades, consumers have been unwittingly buying their products and supporting these industries, which have now become very influential, and start spending money to influence policymakers. And, you know, we have the best government money can buy. And so you have these industries that have basically built up this this influence. As consumers start shifting the way we eat, and instead of going to fast food restaurants and buying processed and animal products, and start instead buying more plant food and going to farmers markets and community-supported agriculture programs.
Right, the CSAs, yep.
I love CSAs. What that does is it connects people more to their source of their food, they get healthier food, and they are taking money away from this horrendous industry, which means that that industry is no longer going to be able to be as influential in Washington, D.C., and so that's a secondary benefit of voting with our dollars for a better food system. And then these alternative companies that are producing healthier plant-based foods then become more influential in the marketplace, and that also then tends to influence policy. So that's the shift that needs to happen, but it all starts with each of us every day on our plate.
Yes.
And that's where, you know, all of us have to play a role.
Yes, yes. I mean, it starts, and it's all the part that I really do want to read in your book about the consciousness. And I mean, you know, most of what you're saying I know, and I have done better, but now it's reinforcement of why. When you talk about you know, reading what Dr. Jane said about what animals feel, I want to segue into this one. I have to ask you the fish story, because I had Sylvia Earle on, Dr. Sylvia Earle, a marine biologist, and I don't think I've asked like three questions. She talked for the entire show, and I loved it. It was so great. But this is what she says that I caught from your website about fish, which is ruining some of my friends' lives, and they're telling me they don't want to be my friend anymore because of what I've written about fish. She said, I never eat anyone I know personally. And I just hear her say that. She does. I wouldn't deliberately eat a grouper any more than I'd eat a cocker spaniel. They're so good-natured, so curious. You know, fish are sensitive. They have personalities. They hurt when they're wounded. So, no fish?
Correct. I'm completely on the same page. You know, again, these are living, feeling animals. And they have relationships with other fish and other animals. They have memories. They have emotional lives. And the more we pay attention and try to understand these animals, the clearer that becomes. And I think what's kind of happened is that, you know, we human beings tend to more easily relate to others who are more like us, whether that's other human beings who are kind of like us that we understand more, or whether it's mammals who we tend to understand more because we are mammals, so we understand cats, and we look into the eyes of a cow, and it's kind of easier to see somebody's there. Now, when you talk about chickens and birds, they're a little different from us. So sometimes we assume that they don't have the same capacities, but that's not correct. And in the case of fish, they're even more different than chickens. These are animals that live in the water. And so there's a tendency for us not to recognize that they are living, feeling creatures in the same way that we are and that other animals are. So I think that's the kind of prejudice that has existed against fish, and I don't think it's warranted. And the more we look, the more we see that these are individuals who deserve to be treated with respect and compassion.
And I feel so blessed because I'm allergic to fish. And I mean, people think it is a healthier alternative. They think it's less cruel. And the stuff I'm reading about fish, I would not eat it even if I wasn't allergic because of what you might be getting into your body from farm factory raised fish and from fish in the sea. There's lots of really bad stuff polluting those their habitat, and what do you think they're getting into their bodies, and then we're eating them? I mean, it's a big, huge, scary part. So
absolutely, absolutely, the oceans are being depleted of wild fish as they're being overfished, and then you have aquaculture now, which is basically factory farming for fish. You know, both of those are bad, and they're both unnecessary. We can live well by eating plants instead of any animal or any animal food.
So the book has everything. I mean, we'll learn about getting in touch with our values, which to me, that one just jumped off the page. Connecting with nature, another thing. If you're out looking at the cows, it's not as easy to take a bite out of one. Who doesn't want a less stressful life? I mean, it's really funny. I have sleep challenges, very, very big sleep challenges. And my naturopath said, get out in nature, you're Mrs. Green. Okay, so this is 1 minute left, and I want to tell everybody again the way that they can follow you, which is farmsanctuary.org. There are petitions you can sign on your website that take a second. Like, really, I'm not kidding, maybe 3 seconds. Sign petitions. Farm Sanctuary for Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and somehow get involved. Is that the one takeaway? Check you out and learn more about Farm Sanctuary. You get the last word, yeah. My friend.
Yes, go to farmsanctuary.org and get involved with our work. Get the book, Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, and think about the way you eat and make conscientious choices that you can feel good about. Every day, by voting with your dollar on your food choices, you can make a world of difference. So that's really the take-home.
You are making a world of difference, and thanks for showing up in our world. I appreciate it. Everybody, we've got great shows in the lineup. Share this show once you listen to it. Just do that. If that's the one thing you do, is when you listen to this podcast, email 5 of your friends and say, take an hour and give yourself a gift. So that's the one thing I'm going to shout out that they can do. On March 1st, we have Bill Fabricini, who is a contributing author and exercise specialist of Younger Next Year, a book that I have read and given to at least 20 of my friends. And it's all about exercise, eating healthy, moving your body. And then on March 5th, Deborah Fleischer, I think is how I'm going to say her name, founder and president of Green Impact, doing major things with corporations for reducing their carbon footprint. Jean Bauer, thanks for showing up in Mrs. Green's World and for all the work you do.
Thank you. My pleasure. You have a wonderful day.
Okay.